Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. We're revisiting wisdom from a 2019 conversation about our living room. Not the room with the couch you've spent more time on than ever in these pandemic months, but the room you need to live, to breathe, to be. It's hard to feel human or treat others that way when you're squeezed from the inside and the outside by demands, judgments, expectations, rules, and systems. Having no living room takes a toll on you and others. If you struggle, it isn't because you need fixing. You need space. One way of understanding Jesus is that he came to give you and everyone space to live as our true, whole, supported, deeply woven, worthy, powerful selves to restore our living room. Living Room Rehab. That must be an HGTV show. In the Christian tradition, the weeks leading up to Easter, like the ones we're in now, have been known as Lent. Lent coincides with spring in the Northern Hemisphere, and that's no accident. This is a time of preparing for new life. In this episode, the second message of the original six-week conversation, live and in person at Field School in Minneapolis, Greg Meyer speaks to that sense of being always on, always getting input, always accessible, always one more thing to do, no living room. You'll hear that everyone there that Sunday morning was invited to remove their shoes on the way in. So if they aren't already off, I invite you to take your shoes off now. And for at least a little while, let this time you've carved out give you some space. Welcome to your living room.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Greg Meyer, and we are talking living room these days here with Fabric. And, living room to live is something that's incredibly short supply, and I think it's shrinking from us, rapidly. We talked about that last week. Last week, we really kind of zeroed in on this reality that we tend to share where we are so busy and we are so accessible and we are so aware of all the things to do and to know about in this world, and then we have so much stuff to get and to have and to care for and to store, and all of that is squeezing down. All that is taking up so much space in our lives that it's squeezing down something that is really important, and that really important thing that's getting squeezed out is you. It's yourself. There's just no time for you to be a part of that. And what we end up being is simply, we're not here for ourselves. We're here as a resource for all these other things that are really not all that important in our lives. I mean, the things that are actually meant to serve us, but instead they've kind of enslaved us and they've, turned it all backwards. And, we can't leave it that way. We need to turn that around. We need to find another way. We need to do that. And it needs to be turned around because it's you that's important, right? It's you that's important. It's me that's important. It's all the other people in your lives, your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers. It's all the life on this planet that's important, not all this stuff. It's, gotten backwards. So we need room. So we're calling this week Always On, all right? Because I think that is one of the ways that we experience this kind of too much is taken from us and not enough is given back. It's just like a 24/7, I'm always on kind of experience that we're all having. And I'm sure you felt that too. You're always on with people. You're always on with expectations and with demands. Always accessible. Always supposed to do one more thing. No chance just to be. And to be maybe with yourself a little bit, but to be with some things from this world that are good and to be with each other. So we're going to be doing that. And I noticed there's a lot of people without shoes today. Yeah. So you came in, you left your shoes there by the door. And, what's that about? Well, we're going to talk about it a little bit more as this gathering goes on. But basically, you can just kind of put those feet down on the floor and feel the floor. It's sort of an immediacy. I first want to give us a signal that things are different, all right? And that you are a little different, and your way of being here is a little different. And you're grounded. You're touching the earth. Well, at least some middle school tears. Look out for the gum on the carpet. But we're getting there into that place. And we'll be talking about that more. And then you see these tables. There's five groups of tables around here, and they are here also, kind of for the same reason. They're here to give us a chance to experience what we are. So, you know, there's a good question for you. What are you? And you say, well, I'm a human being. Or you can name it all kinds of ways that really don't tell you that much. But in terms of the conversation that we're having now, what you are is, well, what you aren't is that resource for all the busyness and all the wheels of the economy of our world. That's not what you are. What you are is, if you think about our three-stranded rope here that we talk about a lot with fabric, is what you are is this one strand that is important, that is alive and is full of promise and hope, but all by yourself, you are incomplete. Now, you aren't meant just to be that one strand. You're meant to be woven together with the others, with the people that are here, with your friends, with your family, with your neighbors, like I said, with all the people, with all the life that is on this planet. And then you're also meant to be woven together then with that which always remembers what you are and who you are. That which is beyond us, that which we often nickname and we call God. And to put those things together. So that's a lot of what we're out. So these tables are a chance for you to savor that for a few minutes. If you're listening on the podcast, this is a little weird, but that's okay. Just hit pause and go get another cup of coffee and go talk to one of your coworkers or a family member or whoever happens to be around, or make a phone call and just check in with someone. If you're driving, that's even more awkward, but you can be creative and figure it out. But let's savor this time with each other and with these gifts, okay? One of the things we talked about last week, that if you want to start making this space for self, if you want to start creating this living room for yourself, you can try it by pushing out all the stuff that's not supposed to be there, but it works much better to instead invite in the stuff that is supposed to be there. That kind of naturally displaces what's not supposed to be there. It works a lot better. It's the thing you're saying yes to, not what you're saying no to. It's embracing the stuff that your life is really yearning for. Now, we can talk about this, and that does help because understanding is one of the big keys to all this, but mostly we do need to experience it. We need to have this sense, this feeling of what it is we're saying yes to, and I hope this was just at least a little bit of a foretaste of that, a little sample of it for you. I hope that this community is a place where you feel that one of the reasons you keep coming here is that you find space to be who you are, and you get a chance to figure that out and take that on into the rest of your week. But like I said, this is not a new problem. We do experience it in a way today, I think, that probably no other generation has quite experienced it with the technology and so on. Today, our society has created what I call the superpower to be able to, like, just always, you know, have us 24/7 from a million different angles. But it is something that's always been here. And in fact, there's a really ancient story that goes, it has roots that go back thousands of years, that was planted in the Old Testament to be there precisely for us at these times when we feel imprisoned, when we feel trapped by the stuff that doesn't, that shouldn't be in charge and is squeezing our life out and is trying to kind of show us the road back to a life that actually matters. It's a story we've talked about before, but never with this lens before, and I want to walk you through it. It comes from the third chapter of Exodus, the story about Moses and Moses and his discovery of who he was and why he was. And it is on the back of your Sunday papers, but I'm not going to be following through that exactly. I just kind of want to narrate you through it. So Moses at this point is a grown man. You know, he was a Jew that was raised in the Egyptian royalty and so on. And so he had a really conflicted identity. And by this time, as a grown person, he just didn't quite know who he was. And then on top of all that, he'd really gotten in trouble, and like nothing was working. The only thing he could do was to figure out is to run. I just got to escape. I'm just going to put it all behind me. I'm just going to run. And he heads out into the wilderness, okay? Now, wilderness, when you see that word wilderness in the Bible, it should always stop you and say, what are they talking about here? Because wilderness is a location, yes, but it's really more of a metaphor. It's telling you something. And what is wilderness? Wilderness is this place that cannot sustain life. That's what it represents in the Bible. It's this place that you can't stay there too long. You will lose yourself there. It's the place where all the living room has been squeezed out. There's no place to live in the wilderness. Nonetheless, there he is, and he's trying to figure it out. He's trying to make it work. And then the story picks up, and it says that Moses then led this flock of sheep that he was in charge of through or past, it says past the wilderness, that should really make you stop. Whoa. I mean, he not only went into the wilderness, he went beyond it. Like, what's beyond the wilderness? The wilderness already can't support life. Where he ends up after that must be a really scary place. It says he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. You've been there. That is just, you have had everything sucked out of you. And then you got pushed one step further. And where were you? You get to this place where you are so vulnerable. You are so broken. You're asking so many questions. You're so ripe to see what really matters and how it all stacks up, even though you're totally powerless to do anything about it. He gets to that place, and Moses sees something. He sees a bush that is on fire, a bush that is burning, but it doesn't seem to be getting burnt up. It's not being consumed. Well, I mean, he says, I know this, like, I'm on fire, I'm burning up, but I am being consumed. What's going on there? And is this a hallucination? What is it? I'm in the wilderness, I'm in the desert. So he goes closer to see it, and as he gets closer, this voice comes from the bush and stops him and says, come no closer. Take off the sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Now, you guys all took off your shoes, left them over there. You can trade up on your way out, by the way. I've been checking out your socks, too. Pretty cool. So you take off your shoes. What's that all about? I mean, why do we do this? You are on holy ground. Well, we're not on holy ground. Like I said before, we're in a middle school auditorium, you know? This is holy ground. It's holy ground because you're here. You and all the wonder, the possibility, the hope, the love that comes, that was given you and that is passing through your life, you are here. This is a holy place. If you are stopping and thinking about who am I and what is my role in this world and why do I have that, this is a holy moment. This is a barefoot moment. It isn't a barefoot moment because, you know, God made the rules, said, when you're in my presence, take off your shoes. I want everybody to take off their shoes when they're around me, you know. It isn't a holy place because it was designated as a place where something religiously significant happened one time. So it's all game playing. God doesn't play games. No, it's because God is God. God is where everything is raw and open and immediate, and we're there, and we're touching, and we're sensing, and we're feeling, and we're, that's what makes us holy, and it's this still place that we are in with one another. Moses understands this. He gets this. His tradition understood this. And so then God speaks from that fire. Now, this is like your social media feed, your text messages, your email, your phone calls, the ads you track, your house, your hobbies, your undone chores, your undone homework, all right, your bank account, your undone tax returns. Your tax returns, all of them stand before you, all right? They're all piled up in front of you, and from within them, a voice is coming that is not consumed by this pile of stuff. Now, I'm always consumed by this pile of stuff, but somehow there's this voice within it that is not consumed by it all right? And this voice says, I am the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Identity. He's saying, you have walked so far from this, you've almost forgotten, and I'm calling you back to who you are. You're a child of my child, the child of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. These are Moses' people, his history. He's been burying himself in his what, his busyness, his escape, his running away, and he's left behind his who, his identity, and his why, which is his purpose, right? And then when Moses realizes what's going on, he's terrified, the story tells us. He's afraid to look. He says he closes his eyes because he does not want to look. And juxtaposed against that is God saying, no, I will look because I'm not afraid. Because there are things that need to be seen here. It says, I have seen the misery of my people who are in Egypt, this place where you are enslaved, right? I have heard the cry on account of their taskmasters. This is our story, folks. Last week, we talked about taming the attachments and the commitments in our lives so that they can serve us rather than enslave us, right? Those, all those things are your taskmasters. The place where they have you is your Egypt, all right? And God knows the misery of our people who are still in that Egypt. God sees us. God does not turn away, even when we do. Now, I need to unpack what we're thinking about when you talk about God and something like that. In case you're thinking that, well, whenever we're thinking about God, we've got to be thinking about, like, you know, some deity sitting on a cloud or something like that who's, you know, controlling things, running things, you know, exercising some sort of superpower over the world. And no, I don't think that's what we're called. I think we need to let God be a little bigger than that. In fact, I think we need to let God be a lot bigger than that. I think when we talk about God, when the Bible talks about God, probably trying to say two things. One, that this is something beyond our human experience. And two, that whatever this God is, it's intrinsically the fullness, the order, the beauty, and the wonder of this universe that we are in. And so when Moses hears God speaking, Moses isn't getting rules or orders from a powerful being. No, he is in that thin place, beyond the wilderness, glimpsing a bit of the meaning and the purpose of things. He's touching shoes off. He's touching what his life, his neighbor's lives, and life itself are all about. He's getting a sense of what it was he's been missing. Now, this burning but not being consumed bush then tells Moses that God wants to free Moses' people from those taskmasters or captors, and he wants to send Moses to do it. And this is kind of the clincher in the story. This is the place where the big takeaway is for us. So Moses asks, well, so who are you? Who am I going to tell sent me? And God says, my name? You want to know my name? My name is I am who I am. I am who I am. Now, let's stop for a minute again and think about that. That just might be a pretty good definition of what we would be thinking about when we say God. That which truly is what it is, fully is who it is. I am nothing but, there's nothing else inside me except who I am. And everything that possibly could be me is fully here. That's God. Now, if God, who calls us and seeks to weave itself with us, is I am who I am, then there's, I think, a pretty obvious question that comes to us. Do you hear it in that? If the God that calls us is I am who I am, then what is the question to us? It is not, so what will you do now? No, it's not about performance. If this God is I am who I am, then the question to me is, am I who I am? Or have I been running from it? Have I been playing a different game? Have I forgotten it? Have I left it behind? Have I not chased it, pursued it? Now, somehow that is the answer to the enslavement, this always-on life we live on, this trading of ourselves for the wonders of our busy, pervasive, and consuming world, okay? And you might wonder, well, how is this an answer to our always-on life? And let me just point out a couple of things that I think are so important, and I just want to share them with you. And first is this. It means that your way out of this always-on life is not isolation. It isn't isolation. You can move to Alaska, and you can hole up in a cabin. You can live off of the land and off the grid. You can run. You can throw out your smartphone, you know, quit your job. You can stay off the web, ignore television. You can turn all the switches off. But that's just isolation. We did it last week, right? Stand with your arms outstretched and make sure I got this much room and there's no one within this. I've got my space. But that's not how you're going to discover who you are. We aren't meant to live in isolation. We're created for a community. We're meant to be to discover ourselves in relationship with other people, in the rubbing shoulders with the stuff of this world, with our engagement, with the entanglements of this world, with the compromises of it. That's where we define ourselves. That's where we discover ourselves. That's where we make room for other people. We are meant to be with them, not apart from them. So it isn't through isolation. It also means your solution isn't self-optimization. Boy, that's a biggie one now. How can you optimize who you are and what you do so you can get everything done? The question isn't how much can you do. Your job isn't to heroically win at the game of too much, even though a lot of people are telling you you can if you just know this secret, right? The question is, who are you? And that's a real left turn from the world where you have to dance for your dinner every day, where you can't slow down, you can't take a break, right? You can't stop to breathe because there is always someone who is willing to work harder and longer and for less than you do, and if you let up, they will take your place. You can play that game, or you can decide the question isn't about that at all, and the better question is simply, who am I? And how will I engage in this world because of it? The last is it means you are not a to-do list. That seems so obvious and it seems to be such good news. You are not a to-do list. Yeah, you have one. I've got one too. We all have them. That's okay. But how many days have you felt like your purpose simply seems to be to get to the end of your to-do list by the end of the day, and then you get to sleep not quite long enough, and you get up in the morning, and you've got another one, and you're going to do it again and again and again, and you are just your to-do list. Yeah, as long as space for you to be who you are is at the end of your to-do list, and when you get to the end of it, then you can start wrestling with some of these questions and decide what you actually wanted your life to be about in the first place, rather than you being in your to-do list and everything that you are doing is a way of unpacking who you are, discovering, wrestling with that question, I'm sorry, then you are your to-do list, but you don't have to be. You don't have to be. You're more than that. So the message to you is simple. And I'm not here to tell you that you can do it all because you don't have to. I'm here to tell you these simple three words. You are enough. You are enough. Just the way you are. Right? So just remind yourself of that often. When you find yourself holding your breath or your teeth clenched, just take off your shoes. And this is something then start passing on to other people, parents. Can you let your kids have those barefoot moments? Can you give them space to be who they are and reward that? Enjoy it, talk about it, share it with them. Those of you with a spouse, a partner in your life, it's amazing that the people that we know how to push the buttons on the best are the people that are closest to us, the people we love the most. And often because we have so much hurt and stuff inside, so much unfigured out stuff inside of us, it's just a lot easier to make the people around us feel a little bit of pain, feel a little bit of squeezed. Somehow we think that's dealing with what we need to do, but it's not. But it's not. You know, kids with your friends at school, it's a cruel place. Give your kids living room around you and enjoy them. Those of you who are at work, boy, can you give living space to the people who share that office, that department with you? If you have a role where you have authority or power over other people, remember that your people are people first and workers second, and honor that. Create that living space for them so that they can take it home and give it to the people that they love as well. I think it's an important thing for us. That's the last thing in your outline. Creating living room isn't only for you, but for you to extend to others. God came into this story with Moses to open up his living room, to take him back out of the wilderness, but it was for a reason. It was to give it to Moses, but then so that Moses could do it for his people. So create this living space and do it for others.
Thanks for listening. Maybe sharing this podcast will help you start an important conversation with someone in your life. You can find discussion resources and more ways to connect on our website at fabricmpls.com. Creating living room is something we need to do together. And that movement together toward wholeness and interconnection of self, other people, this world, and the divine, that which always remembers, knows, and draws you toward who you are, toward who we are. That is how we talk about life woven deeply.